Chris Kershaw tipping pitches. CJ, how does the hitter see that and take advantage?
Well, first and foremost, Chris, if it did happen, it always happens when the pitcher is in the stretch. Rarely can you pick up pitches when a guy is thrown from the windup, and that's what we saw in that seventh inning.
Bobby, it's a really exciting week for baseball fans because we finally get to see the debut of one of the most hyped prospects in recent memory, and that is the emergence of Mack Williamson.
Oh, you're annoying. But that is true. Mack Williamson has just been Aaron Judge for the Giants this year so far.
Yeah, and so we got to shout out a former guest, friend of the pod, Austin Zimmerman, who called this during spring training from Arizona, told us that Mack Williamson had retooled his swing. And if he got called up, we would just wait and see. And here it is. He's raking so far. He has like 3 home runs through his first, like, you know, 5 or 6 game, which is sustainable if you think about it. Like, he's going to hit 80 home runs this year.
Basically, if you're a scout and you listen to this podcast, I want to question your sanity. And I also want to tell you to clip those 30 seconds where Austin was just raving about Mack Williamson and give the man a job.
Yeah, seriously.
What you're really talking about is the Ronald Acuna era is officially starting, and we were lucky enough to put off recording this podcast long enough that he would actually make his debut. So I, for one, feel like our procrastination was actually worth it.
I think it was worth it, honestly. Yeah, so a couple of days ago, the Braves made it official. They called Acuna up to the big leagues. He is probably one of the more hyped prospects in the last 2 or 3 years. And
at such a young age.
Yeah. At such a young age. And probably would have been, I mean, depending on your source, he would have been the top prospect in baseball this year, if not for Shohei Ohtani. But now we got that Ohtani kid out of the way. He's done his thing. He's a scrub, we all know.
Yeah, we're over it now.
Yeah, yeah. He's old news. We're really excited to see Ronald Acuna play. And frankly, the Braves, low-key, are one of the more fun-to-watch teams in baseball right now. Like, they have so much fun young talent already at the major league level, and it's really nice.
I forget where they were talking about this. It was probably Effectively Wild, but they were mentioning how the Braves, for the longest time, because of the 90s teams, because of those 4 starters that were just incredible, they sort of had the organizational mindset that they would rather build around pitchers than hitters, and how it's just kind of statistically proven and really not arguable that it's better to build around bats because they have less of an injury likelihood. And once you assemble a lineup that just is extremely, like, on the positive end at the top of the league in run scoring, then you're just much more likely to beat up on bad teams, I think. Because, you know, bad teams usually have a below average pitching staff. And so they're kind of going away from that, which is not good for me as a Mets fan. But if you're a Braves fan, how did you find us?
Yeah, it is interesting because they've shifted away from it. It still seems to be a somewhat guiding philosophy that they still love their high upside pitchers. And so now they have combined a lot of young offensive talent, guys like Acuna and Ozzie Albies and Dansby Swanson and Freddie Freeman, who's one of the best hitters in baseball, even though no one really talks about that. They have...
Freddie Freeman's beard is too perfectly trimmed. Freaks me out, kind of.
Yeah, he's an interesting character.
He's awesome, but like...
I know.
He just needs to let it grow out a little bit. He looks a little bit too uptight. Chill out, dude.
Oh, maybe it's a new era, man. This is he's got the young talent coming up. He can finally let loose. He doesn't have to be like the clean cut guy anymore, you know?
So you're saying that he's going to let it grow out now?
Maybe he will. Maybe he's turning a corner.
Freddie, man, I got a good barber for you.
Although that said, I feel like if you've been this good for this long with this level beard, maybe don't change anything. Like you're doing something right.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah.
The Mets were playing the Braves last week, and he's just like, double off the wall, double off the wall, double in the gap, yeah, home run. Yeah. You know, it's just like, he can hit to the opposite field out of the shift. I don't know why more people don't talk about him, because that apparently is the only thing that matters. Why can't more guys hit to the opposite field out of the shift?
Yeah, pretty much. So they have a really fun lineup, and they also have a decent amount of high-risk pitchers who, like, they probably can't stay healthy, and they probably can't throw strikes, But if they can do one of those things, they're going to strike out all of the batters, which means, I don't know, the Braves have gotten off to a really hot start. And I feel like it's April in 2018, and we're sitting here being like, the Braves are one of the most fun teams in baseball, which I didn't expect coming into the year.
The NL East is so loaded.
It's stacked.
It went from being the worst division. I mean, I guess this is like how this works, you know, like the life cycle of baseball, that it went from being so bad. In 2015, when the Mets won, when the Mets went to the World Series, it was solely because the rest of the division was hot garbage for the entire year, Nationals included. And the Phillies were like the worst team in the league. They lost like 105 games. And the Braves were just, you know, they lost their usual 92 games or whatever it was. And now they have to deal, now the Mets have to deal with all of these young stars on the Braves. Not to mention they have to deal with Julio Teheran, who dominates them every single time. So, yeah, I don't feel good about the Mets standing right now. Although I think they probably remain in first. They might have dropped to second now. But we're recording this on a Thursday, not long after the Mets blew the game in the ninth inning, as they do, and then lost via walk-off in the 13th inning to the fucking Cardinals. So frustrating.
That's pretty funny, actually.
Jose Martinez is the new Met killer.
Yeah.
He tied the game in the ninth inning, and then he was the winning run.
Yeah.
He's hitting like 600 against them this year.
How do the Cardinals find these guys?
I don't know.
Oh my god, it's so frustrating.
The worst part is that he's like anti-Cardinals in a way. Like, you know, the Cardinals find these guys who are like fundamentally sound. You know, they play the game the Cardinal way or whatever, which just means they're white and boring. But Martinez is not that. He has a really weird batting stance, and you would not teach anyone to play the way that he plays. And it's so, like, anti-Cardinals in that way. Even, like, some of their, you know, more fun mainstays. Like, Yachty, he is, like, the most fundamentally sound player maybe in the entire league. But Martinez is just up there waving his bat around and sort of lunging at everything. And even defensively, he sort of looks a little... He looks gangly. Like, he doesn't really look like a baseball player. Yeah. He looks like he should be playing, like, basketball or, you know, running track because he has these huge, long legs. And I'm like, there is no... There is no corner of baseball that you can't find players that are bad and then they just turn to be good.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. He got up there and he was like, who's Albert Pujols? That's... yeah, man.
They're just going to bother me forever.
Yeah.
It's like, they're not even in my division. Why do I continue to be haunted by them?
I know. Cardinals fans, if you're listening, consider yourselves lucky.
Can we talk about something that's not the Mets losing to the Cardinals?
Yeah.
We could talk about something that's a little more positive for you.
Yeah, let's do it.
And that's Sean Manaea is apparently Jesus.
First no-no of the year, baby.
Yeah, against a team that hadn't been no-no'd in like 10 years.
Yeah, and was off to like a franchise good start.
Offensively and record-wise.
Yeah.
So if you don't know and you've been living under a rock and or you've forgotten something that happened 6 days ago, which was me before we started recording this, Sean Manaea no-hit the Red Sox about a week ago. For the first no-hitter of the year. And yeah, basically that's it. It wasn't really like, it wasn't the most dominant no-hit performance ever, but it was pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, taking into consideration who he was throwing it against, right? Like, I mean, that lineup is stacked. Oh my God, Mookie Betts is so good.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's really not fair.
Yeah.
Not to mention that, like, even some guys who should be good, like Andrew Benintendi hasn't been hitting at all this year. But yeah, Sean Manaea, it was a good performance. I don't know if you saw any of the highlights because there were a couple controversial plays.
Yeah.
Everyone was talking, especially Red Sox tweets were like, nice two-hitter that Sean Manaea is throwing right now. And I'm like, all right, bro, take a chill pill. You're the best team in baseball right now. You don't need to be quibbling over whether or not you got no hit. Who cares?
Red Sox fans are potentially the most butthurt franchise.
Absolutely.
And for what?
Yeah, especially given your last decade and a half.
Yeah.
It's fine. You're going to be okay.
I don't know why they have to take everything so personally.
I don't know.
Like, Mets fans are really fatalistic, and they're very anxious, and every time something goes bad, they immediately feel terrible. But, like, Red Sox fans... It doesn't even have to do with the fact that the team is bad or anything. It's just like when something happens to them, they just take it very personally.
Yeah.
Or if you like Sean Manaea shouldn't have no-hit us.
Yeah. If
Why would he do that?
If you like call it out, like if you were to say to a Mets fan, hey, the Mets aren't doing so great this year, they'd stick their head in their hands and be like, oh my God, I know. And
nothing's ever going to be good again.
And if you said it to Red Sox, you'd be like, well, I would dispute that. I mean, given the, I don't know, man.
Which is weird because the Red Sox used to be like the Mets fans. Yeah. Like ever since, you know, they had the big drought and everything.
Yeah.
And they had everything go wrong in 1986, not to bring up the Mets last World Series or anything like that. You know, won it 7 games. This little guy named Mookie Wilson. Bill Buck. No? Okay. but no, yeah, you're right. Sean Manaea, shout out to him. Who would have thought the A's would be the first team to throw a no-hitter? The A's.
Yeah.
Who we talked about as having potentially the worst pitching rotation in the entire league.
Yeah. Well, they just demoted Kendall Graveman, who was their opening day starter. So things aren't necessarily peachy over there. But, yeah, you know, they're hanging in there, man.
That didn't take long.
It's also interesting because I'm getting no-hitter alerts on a weekly basis right now.
Yeah, they're overdoing it.
It's, yeah, I know. Well,
a no-hitter into the sixth inning is not interesting to me.
I mean, I start paying attention after six.
Like, you've gone six full?
Like, if you've gone 6 no-hit innings, like, that's usually when I start paying attention.
I don't. I'll start paying attention in, like, the 7th or 8th.
Well, I mean, yeah, so I start paying attention, like, at the beginning of the 7th, when you come back out for the 7th inning. Like, that's when I turn on Tyson Ross's, where he almost literally threw his arm off.
Bruh, why would they leave him in?
What the hell was Andy Green doing?
There was no way he was getting out of that.
No, there was no way.
He was at 115 pitches and walking dudes on 4 pitches with no outs in the 8th.
Oh, my God.
What is he going to do? Immediately get 3 straight ground balls?
Yeah.
And then 3 more ground balls in the 9th inning? That is the only way he was making it through that.
Not to mention, this is a guy who hasn't been able to stay healthy over the last 2 years. And you're like, you know what? We're just going to push him. So what if he throws 140 pitches? Nothing bad can come of this.
God. Oh my God! Yeah, that was kind of a mess. But Tyson Ross, he looked like kind of sad. But when Andy Green came out to get him out, he was just like, "Yeah."
He's kind of resigned.
What am I supposed to say here? He didn't have any ground to stand on this with that one.
Yeah. So we talked a bit about how the A's offense has been very good this year, but I believe we'd like to present you with a counterpoint to that storyline.
Yeah, the counterpoint comes from our man. I don't even know who this guy is, but he's verified on Twitter. His name is Ben Maller. Self-described storyteller, provocateur, rabble-rouser, raconteur, professional blabbermouth.
Raconteur.
Sarcasm specialist, doctorate in insomnia. Dang, bro. Do you stay up late? Distant relative of Nostradamus.
Oh my God. I'm kind of mad that you found my alt, man.
I found your burner account.
Yeah.
Which is verified and has 50,100 followers. How many of those?
He has how many?
50.1.
Like 50?
50. How many of those do you think are real, goodness, though?
Oh, so
They're
few.
All Russian bots.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is a little side note. He has benmaller.com as his website in his description. If you click to that, it's a white page with Microsoft Word art at the top of his name and then an embed of his Facebook posts from 6 years ago and nothing else on the page. Okay.
Honestly, this is what I'm modeling my website after from now on. This is what employers want to see.
Scrap what you already have.
Yeah.
Scrap what people seem to enjoy about your website and just go with this.
Oh, this is what they teach me in journalism class about building a portfolio.
That's actually true. I took coding classes.
Oh my God, my Facebook posts from 6 years ago, prime stuff. Oh my God. It's like Green Day lyrics.
Mine are like My Chemical Romance lyrics.
Yeah.
Okay, this is going to be the next, it's going to be a mini version, but it's going to be the next in our installation of reading bad takes on the podcast and roasting them.
The dramatic hot take reading series.
So he tweeted at 7:53 p.m. on April 24th.
Set the scene.
It's a cold, rainy night. He tweeted, breaks. First of all, he spelled breaks wrong. I can't even get through the first word of this fucking tweet. He spelled the version of breaks that he's referring to are like breaks on a car, but he spelled it like breaks as in breaks his ankle. He says, breaks have been pressed on Shohei Ohtani choo-choo train of hype for Angels. And then it's just a screenshot of what looks like a Google Doc or a Word doc that he also wrote because I guess he couldn't fit it all into the tweet. And it says, I like how he headlined it. It's kind of quasi-headlined, from Babe Ruth to reality, as if he's writing like a think piece. And then it says, Shohei Ohtani against A's parentheses T-ball lineup. 2-0, 2.93 ERA with a 0.93 batting average allowed, 2 walks, 18 Ks, and 2 starts. Shohei Ohtani against Red Sox/Astros lineups. 0-1, 8.59 ERA with 2.78 batting average allowed, 7 walks, 8 Ks, and 2 starts.
Wow.
T-ball lineup.
He roasted us, man.
You have thoughts on that? The T-ball lineup?
It's just not true. I'm sorry. Like, they've been one of the best offensive teams in baseball.
The A's had a funny response on Twitter to this.
Yeah.
I don't have it in front of me, but they basically did that stupid SpongeBob meme that makes me laugh every single time with the lowercase and uppercase letters.
Yeah, and just showed by, like, hits and home runs and batting average and...
runs.
Yeah.
Oh, but he had a counter for that. Someone responded to him saying, someone quote tweeted him saying, the A's are third in MLB in runs scored, and he pitched against Boston, he, meaning Ohtani, pitched against Boston with a blister on his finger. And Ben Maller had to say, Ohtani media fanboys have endless excuses. Hashtag yawn. I like how he hashtagged his yawn. And then someone responded saying, do you watch baseball? Classic. Got him there. Do you even watch the game, bro?
Yeah.
He said...
Yeah, what was his clap back? What was his clap back to that?
He clapped back, man. This goes back to, I made this point about Michael Wilbon last week. He was making a similar point, but he was making it in passing, though. And this guy's just kind of really sticking to it.
Yeah. This A's, is the hill he wants to die on.
Apparently. A's run total inflated by handful of high-scoring games. Oakland put up 56 runs in 5 games. 11.2 runs per game. Thanks for the math, Ben. In other 19 games, Athletics have scored rather pedestrian 3.6 runs per game. Hashtag facts. Hashtag do you watch baseball? Oh, wait. And that tweet, with his 50.1 thousand very real followers, that tweet got 9 likes and 58 replies.
Nice. The ratio. The golden ratio.
Oh, God. No retweets. Not one of his 50.1 thousand followers thought that that was worth a retweet.
Okay, so...
his very real Russian bot followers. It didn't have the word Trump in it, so it didn't get any retweets.
Okay, if you think about it, like, if you do take out the games in which the A's scored a lot of runs... they haven't scored very many runs, and no one's talking about this. Okay, Mike Trout may have hit 10 home runs this season, but if you take out the games where he's hit 10 home runs, he has no home runs. Seriously. Oh, my God.
Math.
Yeah, come on, man.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
It is good stuff.
It's not like in those 5 games they scored, like, 30 runs. Like, they scored... 11.2 runs in those per game in those games. That's a lot. That's not sustainable for a whole season.
Yeah.
But like...
also, it's not like you had catchers who were pitching. It's not like these were all position players or something. They were playing against other major league pitchers. I don't understand.
If you take out the games in which they played community colleges in the greater Bay Area, they're basically only scoring 2 runs per game.
God. You know what? He's sticking to his word. He is a provocateur. And I respect that.
I think you forgot the fact that he's also a rabble-rouser.
Oh, man. Yeah, so you heard it here first. Shohei Ohtani's bad.
I also want to say his Twitter picture. Come on, Ben. You got to do better, guy. I invite everyone to go look at it, but it's him outside his front door at night in a suit. And you can kind of see inside to the lamp inside his house. I'm not really sure. Why is he standing outside his own house having someone take a picture of him? Just go inside, my guy. It's probably a privacy thing, man. He's probably a hashtag libertarian conservative thinker. He doesn't want people to see any more than the lamp. Ben, I can see the lampshade, man. It's telling me a lot about you.
Yeah. This is going to get weird. We're going to be like, we know where you live, Ben. Okay, but since we're on the topic of who may or may not be Babe Ruth, we got to talk about another pristine take from the baseball world. And this didn't come from a guy with Russian bots as followers. This came from a relatively well-respected USA Today columnist.
I would say very well-respected.
Yeah. 200,000 Twitter followers. Bob Nightingale. He decided to make the... So if you weren't aware, Didi Gregorius has been very good this year.
And he's now the best player of all time.
And we're going to talk about that a little later on the show. He's good. But here's the thing, is not only is he good, he may be the best Yankees player of all time. So Bob Nightingale's tweet, and I'll just read it to you. It says...
make sure you keep the hashtags in there.
The New York hashtag Yankees always thought their greatest trade in franchise history was stealing Babe Ruth from the hashtag Red Sox.
Dun, dun, dun.
Pause.
They did steal him.
The Didi Gregorius heist from the hashtag D-backs is now entering the discussion. The dude is hitting .364 with 9 homers, 29 RBIs, and a staggering 1290 OPS. Okay.
Well, if you take out the games that Didi Gregorius was bad and the games that Babe Ruth was good, then what we're talking about here is a true fact.
Yeah. All right.
22 Bob, games actually does make him better than literally one of the greatest baseball players of all time.
Let's pump the brakes on this one a little bit.
Let's pump the brakes, B-R-E-A-K-S.
Oh my God. I'm sorry. You deserve to get ratioed and roasted for this. Which, he didn't even get ratioed. Like, 1.4 thousand people thought that this was a good tweet and favorited it.
Maybe they thought it was a joke?
Yeah, maybe. So, Didi Gregorius, maybe a better trade than Babe Ruth? A better acquisition? Yeah, I buy it. Babe Ruth, who had, what was it, like 714 home runs in his career? Babe Ruth. We're talking about Babe Ruth.
Not Babe Ruth. We're talking about Babe Ruth, like the real one.
Like, we've all seen the think pieces just over the last couple of weeks. It's like Didi Gregorius is making Yankees fans forget about Derek Jeter. And fine.
True. Jeter's bad.
Yeah.
That's going to be my next tweet.
I mean, and that's a
Come
fine
on the pod
take.
Next week and roast myself.
Because there was kind of a question about, like, okay, who's going to take over at short? Well, the interesting thing is they also have Gleyber Torres. I don't know, man.
Gleyber Torres, who has an alarming amount of weak singles up the middle for base hits.
Yeah.
He's had, like, 7 already.
I don't know, man. I didn't even take the time to, like, go back and look through and find any other trades that might be better than this, because there's literally no point. Because Didi Gregorius, again, love him. Amazing player. Great Twitter follow if you don't already follow him, because he tweets.
Hashtags start spreading the news after every single Yankees game. With like 40 emojis in it.
Yeah, it's the best thing ever, and it just brightens my day. But he's been good for like a year and a half, y'all. Let's take it down a notch.
Also in the juiced ball era at Yankee Stadium with the short right field porch. And like, he's really good.
Yeah.
But he's not Babe Ruth.
Yeah. Also,
I can't even believe we're having this conversation.
I know.
Obviously, he's not Babe Ruth.
We're seriously dissecting it.
I think the only logical solution for this conversation in this tweet is that 50 years from now, you and I have to make Sandlot the reunion, or we just need to remake it entirely, and it's going to be a Didi Gregorius signed baseball that they hit over the fence.
Yeah.
It's going to be some kind of robot dog that they have to run away from.
Again, this is not Didi slander on this podcast, because I will not accept that, because Didi Gregorius is sincerely one of the loves of my life.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Come on.
Jalen and Jacoby, they have an ESPN radio show and a TV show now. They have a no slander list, where it's just a list of guys where, you know, their producers come up with topics and whatnot, and they want to, like, hot take about it. They want them to, like, hot take a little bit about it because they're on ESPN radio or whatever. And over the years that they've been doing their show, Jalen is basically just, like, he puts people sometimes on there that are on the no slander list, and no matter what happened with that guy in, like, the previous day, he refuses to talk bad about them. And he just recently put Russell Westbrook on that list, which is, like, that's a hot take in itself.
Yeah.
But we're putting DD on the no slander list.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pretty much everyone in the MLB who doesn't do something racist or violent is on the no slander list. We don't like to slander people.
Yeah, that's not the point of this. But we will slander you if you have a bad take like this. I think the answer is he has to relinquish his column, maybe, and give it to us.
Yeah. We have to take over all of his Twitter followers. We now just have 200,000 Twitter followers. Actually, 201,000, because we already had 1,500 of our own.
Yeah, man. You heard it first. Yeah. Start spreading the news.
All right. When we come back, some serious actual conversations about Didi and the rest of the Yankees. I know there's lots of love in your heart, but who you gonna give it to? I'm sure there's lots of guys that you see, but I swear the night is cool. Alright, now that we've sort of put Didi Gregorius and the Yankees in perspective, let's totally blow that out of the water and talk about them crazy. So Didi Gregorius actually is Babe Ruth, is the thing so far this year.
We just roasted our good friend Bob for talking about how good Didi's been. And now we'd like to point out that Didi Gregorius is hitting .372 on the year. What?
Yeah. Well, the whole knock on him was like he was a solid defensive shortstop. and he had decent contact skills, but they would never really turn into any legitimate power skills.
Yeah, it was like he'd always be like a light hitting shortstop who like can make some contact and like hit a few home runs and like maybe steal a couple bases, but it's like mostly his defense. And now it's both. He was just like, oh, you mean I just have to hit the ball over the fence?
Oh, that's all it takes.
That's all it takes, man.
That's what, okay, so I jokingly said, now we're getting to our favorite segment, which is where we just read out the Tipping Pitches account tweets.
Yeah. Oh, I think this is the fourth tweet we're reading on the show.
Well, I jokingly said, like, you know, fly ball revolution, whatever, everyone's trying to hit more home runs, but it's not even like he's trying to lift the ball more. I don't know. Maybe he is, but all of his home runs are just straight up line drives. Like, he just followed the model of, I'm just going to get better. I'm just going to start hitting more home runs. It's like it never really even occurred to him before that. And I was at the Yankee game on Tuesday night when they played the Twins. They beat the Twins, as they always do. And Jose Berríos pitched. And Jose Berríos, no joke, really good pitcher. Filthy stuff. He missed with one changeup. Didi put it halfway up the second deck. Like, that is not the Didi. Like, that is just not the Didi Gregorius. Hard name to say when we're talking fast. But that is not the Didi that was on the team 2 years ago. It's just simply, he's an entirely different player. His profile is just completely different as a baseball player now.
Yeah, it's wild. Because he like officially, I guess, broke out in 2016. So he hit .276 that year with 20 home runs. Very good showing for a player who also had a pretty good defensive year too. So it's like, okay, the Yankees got this Didi Gregorius guy, and now all of a sudden he can hit a little bit. That's great. He's, I think he was like, you know, 26, 27 at the time. It's like, this is probably his offensive max. And then the next year, he hits .287 with 25 home runs. And people are like, all right, but like, let's be real. This is his ceiling right now, right? And now he's up here. We haven't hit the end of April yet, and he's already posted 2 wins.
Oh.
2.2 war over like 4 weeks.
That's good.
Yeah, that's very good.
He's hitting third on a team with Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez, and Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing.
That's essentially all you need to know. And I know Stanton has been very bad, and he got booed a lot. He struck out 3 times and almost grounded into a double play in the game that I went to.
Yeah.
So, naturally, Yankees fans did the whole earn your pinstripes booing, which is dumb.
Yeah.
But that's a different conversation. But even still, like, the fact that Gregorius has gotten to a point in his career where a new manager doesn't feel the pressure to bat Giancarlo Stanton, reigning NL MVP and home run king, who is, in this era of StatCast launch angle and velocity, is like a god among men. Doesn't feel the pressure to bat him above Didi Gregorius. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's wild. It's not like Didi Gregorius is hitting the ball particularly hard. I mean, he's probably getting some help from playing in Yankee Stadium.
Oh, definitely.
But
he's one of those guys that was, I think, really helped, not to cut you off, but like really helped by the change in the ball. Like, he's one of those guys that hits those borderline home runs that might have been doubles off the wall. I say doubles off the wall instead of like warning track flyouts, because he doesn't really hit big fly balls. He does hit a lot of line drives.
Yeah.
So they might have been doubles off the wall, or they might have just been snagged at the last second. But even still, like, just him as a player, like, he wasn't hitting doubles off the wall 2 years ago either.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He was hitting like soft contact line drives. Or just grounding out.
Yeah, he really does not hit the ball particularly hard just looking at like StatCast numbers. And this, you know, this is not, we rarely delve into like real statistical analysis on this podcast because that's not what it's about. But he's totally flipped his profile around this year. He's walking, again, this, all of these stats are not sustainable. He's not going to hit .370 this year. Sorry. But
he is going to hit .370. He's literally Chipper Jones, but a shortstop.
Coming into the year, he struck out 14% of the time and walked 6% of the time. Okay, that's fine. It's an above average contact rate and a slightly below average walk rate. He's walking 17% of the time and striking out 9% of the time.
He just flipped them.
Yeah, he was basically just like, I'm just going to swing less, but when I swing, I'm going to make it count more. Why haven't more people tried this?
It's literally like the most basic version of like the Little League just think about it and do it mentality, where you're like, now that he knows what to do, he just does it. It's just like, what, you know, it's like how when you're maturing at a young baseball age, it's like how you sort of learn like the mindset into where you're like, you're thinking about your swing plane and you're thinking about how you want to hit the ball and what kind of pitches you have to do what with the bat. It just all happened in the course of a in the course of his age, like, 27 season, which just is, I mean, there are other late bloomers, you know, but it's just, this has been so sudden, and it's been under such a spotlight with the Yankees, and, you know, quite frankly, like, this very loaded Yankees team, this is just, like, icing on top, you know what I mean? Like, they were never expecting this, and obviously their offense is absurd. Like, they just batted around Jose Berríos. Sanchez hit two home runs, Judge hit a home run, Didi hit a bomb, they were hitting doubles, like, even Gleyber Torres was getting on base, and Andujar can't miss anything these days. I mean, to have Didi Gregorius just being, like, one of the best hitters in baseball is just sort of like an F you to everyone else. Like, it's just not really fair.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Aaron Judge has improved his approach at the plate, and so he's become a better hitter. Great. We all really needed that. We all wanted Aaron Judge to become better.
It's literally like all of them, they just, like, the Yankees coaching staff just downloaded the upgrades and gave it to them. And they're like, all right, you guys are better now.
Yeah.
It's not like all of their progress is so seamless in a way. Like, you know, Judge really struggled a lot when he came up, but then he was great last year, and he went through a couple slumps because he's, you know, a big swing power hitter kind of guy, but they're just doing all of the things that people prescribe good hitters to get better at to continue to improve. You know, like, free swinging players, you kind of want them to improve their walk rate, and even though Judge walked a lot last year, now he's walking at, like, Harper Votto levels, you know, Votto MVP levels. And it's like, you look at Aaron Judge, and you look at, he hits the ball, he has, like, a over 400 batting average on balls in play. And you're like, what is the only way you can get better while still swinging just as hard? Don't swing at bad pitches. And now he's just not. Just, like, it's incredible how good this team is. And they're not even, they're in, like, third in their division right now because they got off to a slow start.
Yeah, with Gary Sanchez and Giancarlo Stanton each batting, like, 200.
Yeah, Sanchez, who's just, he's just, he just realized he should just hit a home run every time now.
Yeah.
Which he's doing now.
Yeah. Sanchez has run into bad luck, and he's fine, and he'll be okay. Stanton, it's like, it's still a little worrisome. I mean, Stanton's going to be fine, too, but, like, he's just look lost at the plate, man.
He looks really bad.
Yeah, it's not good. And it's not, like, a factor of bad luck, either. Like, he's just swinging at everything. And so maybe...
He's literally swinging. He's striking out on, like, four pitches every time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not good.
And, you know, two or three of those pitches are just sliders that don't even start in the zone. So, like... Whoever was catching for the Twins on Tuesday when I was there was having a hard time keeping the ball in front of him at the pitches that Stanton was swinging at repeatedly. And it's just, it's weird. I mean, I'm sure he'll run into a little bit of better luck in terms of the way that guys are pitching him. Like, he'll find more mistakes and he'll be Giancarlo. Like, you know, he hit that curveball, which was a major mistake. He hit it to, like, England. But other than that, I mean, if you have a good slider, a good tight slider that you can... start on the outer half of the plate against him, you know, if you're ready, you can start on the outer half of the plate against him and just throw it so that it is in the opposite batter's box. You're basically striking him out every time.
Yeah.
And that's what Berríos did.
Yeah. Yeah. The problem is he's just swinging at everything. It feels like he is swinging at way more because he, I don't know, it almost feels like maybe he wants to match his performance last year because he's swinging out of his ass on every single pitch. And I know that's like the Giancarlo way is just swing out of your ass and it's going to go very far. But he's doing that more. He's almost taken it up a level to the point where it's like, all right, the pendulum has swung too far in that direction where you've made yourself kind of unproductive, right? Because his walk rate has gone down and his strikeout rate has gone up, but like he's still hitting the ball hard and his... BABIP is kind of right in line with his career, so it's not like he's just run into a bunch of bad lucks and the balls aren't falling. He's just striking out at everything. So
yeah, Giancarlo notwithstanding, though, this team, their lineup is loaded. Severino is on track and really good. I wanted to talk about something a little past just like how good their team is. I wanted to talk about how really likable they are. And being at a game, how kind of sad it was that I sort of felt like there's this pressure as like a Mets fan or as like anything but a Yankees fan to sort of hate them. And that's all well and good because you can hate the front office. You can, when they're signing guys like Giambi, or even A-Rod, it was very easy to hate them in the moment because they're just throwing a bunch of money at the problem. And it feels like they have an advantage that everyone else does or everyone else does not. But with this team... it's like most of these guys are homegrown. Like, granted, the counter argument to that would be that they made a lot of financial mistakes that they were able to overcome and still keep a robust farm system because they didn't have to give away prospects to get off contracts and that kind of thing. And that's an advantage that they would have over I don't know, your run-of-the-mill small market team or your run-of-the-mill huge biggest market team that got screwed in the Bernie Madoff scandal. But I find it hard to dislike this team, and being at the game, like, it was just sort of a sad moment for me. Like, I don't know how else to voice it other than, like, I love every single player on this team with the exception of Aroldis Chapman, and I didn't feel like I could really root for them. It was weird. Because, like, you know, we talk a lot about on this show about, like, rooting for good players, rooting for great personalities, and the Yankees have all that. It's bizarre. I know, like, last year there was the sort of, this is just a fun team, like, this is not the evil empire, and then they went and got Giancarlo, and it kind of was the evil empire, but with the exception of Giancarlo, like, who else have they really gone and just given a bunch of money to? No one.
Yeah.
The rest of their production is coming from guys who they called up.
Yeah. Well, and even with the Giancarlo thing, it's not like they went out and signed him as a free agent and just offered him more than it, right? It was like, I mean, obviously the Marlins wanted to get rid of him and he could, and the Yankees could afford to take on his contract. But yeah, baseball, it feels, is so stuck in its, you know, for better or for worse. I'm not saying this is necessarily a bad thing, but it feels like more than any other sport, teams seem to hold on to their label of being disliked, right? Like the Red Sox are up there also with the most hated teams in baseball, and that has dogged them for decades. And same with the Yankees, right? They have always been the evil empire, and they really always will be the evil empire no matter what they do. And part of that is just the fact that they are good, and people tend to hate the team that is really, really good. But it really does feel like a lot of these labels tend to stick. Whether or not the Cardinals and Cardinals fans and the Cardinals organization is bad doesn't really matter, because it's fun to hate the Cardinals, right?
Yeah. Well, it's fun to hate the Yankees because of their fans, too. They're the snottiest, most entitled group of annoying fans in all of sports. Not even just baseball. It's all of sports.
Yeah.
They're kind of like Real Madrid in that way for all of my international soccer fans. The other thing with Yankees fans, though, is, and I noticed this because it was in such stark contrast to how I was feeling as a Mets fan in this last week with how they've sort of hit a bump in the road and their bullpen is kind of struggling. It's just, it's not comparable at all to be a Yankees fan or to be a fan of any other team. You know, I, especially with the Mets, but with all teams, really, like, baseball fan bases are so fatalistic. When things start to go wrong, most fan bases kind of think this is where it's going to unravel. When the bullpen starts to give up the game, they think, oh, nothing's ever going to be good again. No one ever feels good about when their bullpen or their closer comes into the game. And the Yankees fans aren't immune to that. Like, when Dellin Betances came in the game on Tuesday and he was terrible, and the Yankees fans were like, oh, here goes this guy again. He's just going to blow it again. Let's get him out of here. But, like, when the Yankees fans see that something's going wrong for their team, they don't think that this is where things unravel. They think they're entitled to their team being incredible all the time, and whereas with other teams it sort of feels like an inferiority complex, and they always kind of think they have imposter syndrome, like their team is just going to blow up in their face at any moment.
Yeah, it's the like Yankees the, it's fans like the, it's like the exact, rug's going to get pulled out from under us at this moment, right?
The Yankees fans are like, we own the rug, we own the house, we own every single thing about baseball, we own all these other teams, we have more championships than the next five teams combined, like, and so they have like this very opposite superiority complex, and they just sort of feel like they're entitled to winning. And when someone is performing poorly, they're like, we're just going to replace you with someone else. Like, we're fantastic, and we're just going to replace you with someone else. They don't put up with that bullshit. And so, I don't know. It was just, for me, it was in very stark contrast to, like, they feel pride and other teams sort of feel guilt for, like, being good. Yankees fans feel pride when their team is great. They're like, yes, you're living up to this legacy of Babe Ruth, DiMaggio, Gehrig, Mantle, and when the Mets are really good, I'm sort of like, should I feel good about this? Yeah, like, I kind of feel like I'm gonna feel guilty when they are losing 7 out of 10 games next week. Like,
it very much.
I mean, I know you can relate to that as an A's fan too,
right? It's like being a fan of most teams. It feels like every game is very much make or break, right? If you win the game, it's like, well, it's just one game. And if you lose the game, it's like, we've basically lost the division, right? I mean, and I don't I think fans have different degrees of how much they actually internalize it or vocalize that sort of thing. Mets fans are notoriously, like, very outwardly fatalistic, right? And on Twitter, it's like, they're never gonna win another game again or something like that, right? Like, we've talked about that on this podcast before.
Just go into Anthony DiComo's mentions, like, once.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it's like the A's just took 2 out of 3 from the Rangers, but they lost the last game against the Rangers. And so you're like, Jesus, guys, like, it's a last place team. What does it say about us? Forgetting that, like, they played, you know, 667 baseball in that series, yeah. Right? Like, net win, you can't win every game. But Yankees fans are like, no, you can. And we will. And we will find guys who will win. Which is why you see guys like Giancarlo Stanton getting booed so much. It's because, like...
It's really incredible how much they're booing him.
And it's really messed up because you don't do that. Like, I don't think that I would boo my own player unless they had done something, like, morally reprehensible.
Yeah, I booed Familia last week.
Yeah.
I was at the game.
And that's good and fine, and you should, right? You should boo Jose Reyes.
I do.
But I'm not going to boo... It's like... A couple years ago when Jim Johnson was still in the A's, and he was really bad. He was blowing most of the saves. But A's fans would boo him, and I was like, this doesn't feel like a situation where I want to boo this guy. It feels like I feel really bad for him because I don't like seeing these players struggle, right?
You don't want to boo him, you just don't want him to come in at all. Yeah. You don't want to have to get to that point.
Yes, exactly. Like, I don't want him to make these mistakes. And so it really hurts me. I don't know, maybe it's just because... Maybe I'm too generous of a baseball fan, but even when there's like, when the A's are beating up on an opposing pitcher, I'm kind of like, oh, but like, this probably really hurts him, you know? Like, when the guy leaves in the second inning and gives up 7 runs, I'm like,
oh, I feel terrible for
those
guys.
Oh, God, this so hurts.
But also, like, I was a pitcher and I had outings like that where I just couldn't even get out of the second inning, you know?
Oh, it sucks.
It's the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
It's just like, you just get so mad at yourself that you start to tear up a little bit. You just want to throw things.
Oh, my God. And you're standing on the mound, and it feels like everyone is just staring at you because everyone is staring at you, and they're thinking actively about how bad you are right now.
Yeah. They're like, we can't find some scrub that's better than this guy.
Yeah.
You know, like...
But, and so I think that most fans are pretty wary of that and try – and generally speaking, I don't think you see a lot of fan bases actively booing their own players or whatever.
It's also like this very stupid New York thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, we're New York. If you can't make it here, then get out. You can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen. Like,
but if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere, man.
Start spreading the new... No. Like, quite frankly, it's stupid, though. It makes for a worse fan experience for the people who are trying to remain level-headed by the rest of the fan base being like, hashtag Mets will never win ever again, you know? I don't know. It's frustrating to me because... Especially in the era of, like, beat reporters being in the locker room with, like, phones in everyone's faces. Like, you know, not every place is, like, New York with the media and whatnot. But pretty much every player has to answer to the media every day. No matter if you play in Kansas City or you play in New York. You know, most players don't give a shit about the New York Post headlines. Like, let's just be honest. I don't think Giancarlo Stanton cares that the New York Post is running more like Giancarlo headlines. In the second week of the season. Maybe he does, but if so, that's sort of Kevin Durantian, and he shouldn't care about that. It goes back to that like weird entitlement that Yankees fans have, that they just feel like their players should always be good, and when they're not, they can just boo them because they have 27 rings, bro.
Yeah. Now, I'm not going to lie. If I was a Yankees fan, I wouldn't boo Stanton or think that like we deserve it or anything, but I'd probably be like,
you would talk your shit.
I'd be like, we're the Yankees. We'll be fine. Like, don't worry.
Yeah. So if you talk to a Yankees fan now, they'll be like, and I know this firsthand because I've had this conversation with a friend of mine who I went to the game with on Tuesday. I've had this conversation with him so many times by being like, of course the Yankees are going to be good always. They have the most money. They spend the most money. They have the resources to be able to build up a farm system. And if they miss on a player and they have to pay out the extra $80 million of Alex Rodriguez's contract over 2 years, like, it doesn't hurt them. They can still get prospects and afford to wait to develop them because they can pay guys to fill minor league roles or to fill roles on the major league roster. And I'm making this like very nuanced argument, and he's just like, the Yankees fans will be like, yeah, but look at the team now. It's all guys that we developed. It's all homegrown guys. It's all this and that. And then they will do a complete 180 next year when they sign Harper, and they'll be like, well, it's not our fault we're the richest franchise. We've just won the most.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like they have their cake and they eat it too, and there's nothing anyone else can say because there is only one other team who has double-digit World Series titles, and the Yankees have damn near 30.
Yeah.
So, like, it's impossible to argue with them.
Yeah, it's a very reductionist analysis, which is why the most interesting fan bases are the ones who don't swing too far to either end, right? They are not so self-deprecating that, like, they don't think anything will ever be good ever again, but they also think that everything will always be good forever, right? Because, like, you can't have a rational conversation there when there's actually...
No, we're looking at two different ends of the spectrum right now with the Mets and the Yankees, and, like, right. Neither of them are good. I hate Yankees fans, and I hate Mets fans. I am, like, a huge Mets fan. Bleed orange and blue, whatever. And I hate being around other Mets fans. It makes me nauseous. That's why I like watching games with you. Because you're an A's fan, so you know the pain, but you don't actually feel it in every second and express it while we're watching Mets games.
Yeah.
One of the negatives to being or trying to be a level-headed Mets fan on Twitter is that you see everyone's ridiculous reactions and you sort of feel this weird sense of maybe I should feel like this too. And everyone was freaking out about the Matt Harvey situation with just in general, really, him going to the bullpen and saying, you know, I'm a starting pitcher. And then more specifically recently, Anthony DiComo, friend of the pod, who has come up multiple times on this episode, he tweeted that Matt Harvey didn't want to talk to him or other reporters about his bad outing from the bullpen, and they came up to him, and you have it in front of you. You want to read it?
Yeah, so Anthony DiComo's tweet, which is what had Twitter in a tizzy the other day, was Matt Harvey laughed audibly when approached by reporters today seeking comment about his bullpen debut, which, side note, did not go well. He was not very good out of the bullpen for his first,
Shocker. A guy who struggles in the first couple innings as a starter also struggles in his first inning as a reliever.
So he said to reporters, no chance, zero chance. Harvey was asked why. Quote, I have nothing to say to you guys, he said. He was asked why not. Quote, I don't fucking want to.
It actually says, I don't, quote, expletive want to, but I'm going to assume that he didn't say, I don't shitting want to.
I don't damn want to.
I don't damn want to talk to y'all.
I don't asshole want to do this.
I don't freaking want to talk to you guys. Yes, so Twitter, as it does, got itself into a tizzy. And, you know, I often think that reporters find themselves too self-important in these moments where they're like, we have an obligation as members of the media to report on what goes on a day-to-day basis. But, like, I get that this is their job, you know, like, they can do their job better if players are just willing to talk to them and give some BS platitude that they say 1,000 times on a daily basis. So I am sympathetic to the side of Twitter, which I think you are also in agreement with, that is, like, who really cares, right? Who cares if he's mad and doesn't want to talk to the media? But on the other hand, it's like, I've made this argument a million times with Kevin Durant and Oklahoma City and Russell Westbrook and how they get mad at the media over petty shit and, like, they don't want to just answer the basic questions. And I am going to be a little, like, old man yelling at cloud with this. I'm going to be a little, like, 1980s sports media glory days kind of analysis with this and be like, just talk to the media. It's part of your job. I've made this argument so many times with Kevin Durant that, like, the media and covering baseball and covering basketball and the TV deals and all that stuff are the reason that these people even have jobs. So, like, the least that you could do is just say your basic platitudes and say, I don't really want to go further into it and take 30 seconds out of your day and not be an asshole to other people. If you're going to reduce it down to its very basic level, it's like, just don't be an ass to other humans. And reporters are also humans. So just talk to them normally. Like, it's not their fault that you sucked out of the bullpen.
Yeah, so I agree with some of that. But you know what I'll say is that I disagree on the point that I think he should just suck it up and talk to the media. Because Matt, if you look at the arc of Matt Harvey's career, it has not been a fun one. Because he was called up right in 2013, 2012, 2013.
back half of 2012.
Yeah, he was called up in 2012.
2013, started the All-Star game.
Yeah, exactly.
Hit Derek Jeter.
And this is before...
Greatest moment of my life.
Yeah, this is before Syndergaard. This is before DeGrom. This is where Harvey is like the savior of the Mets, basically, right? He's the workhorse of the team, and all these expectations put on him. Meanwhile, he's out doing his exploits in New York City. And so, you know, he is both the best and worst player for like the New York tabloids, you know, because he thrives there. But also the tabloids eat that shit up and they dive on him and everything. And then he basically has had what, 3 or 4 years where he just has not been good because he has not been able to stay healthy. So what I will say is he has really, I think, fallen, like his star has fallen so far that in your first game out of the bullpen and you don't perform poorly and you really don't want to be there, I think you are well within your rights to be like, nah, I have no comment. I don't want to talk about it. Now, what I will
say... That's not what he said.
I know. So he should have handled it better because in doing the whole thing where he's like, I don't effing want to talk to you, all of a sudden the spotlight's on him and it's like, oh, Harvey is such a dick. And, you know, every Mets fan on Twitter was like, we should just release the guy straight up. You know, I'm so glad when he won't be on the team anymore and blah, 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 because he brings this upon himself, obviously. But I get the sentiment and I don't think that he was wrong. He should have just been like, yeah, see, guys.
I do. Like, I do think you have a responsibility to talk to the media.
I don't, like, I think we forget that these people are humans at some point and that he has been beaten around by the tabloids so much and he's had such a struggle over the last 3 years that if you have a bad day, I think you're in your rights to be like, yeah, not today, guys.
I think you're in your rights if the media is coming up to him and beating him around for, like, clubbing. If they're going to come up to him and be like, were you out late last night? Like, that's a dumb question. That's a clown question, bro. But if they're just going to ask him about the literal game for a story that they have to write about the game, and they're going to write about how Harvey was bad because he came in at a critical moment in the game and he sucked, I feel like it's nice to have a quote there. I feel like the bosses of the reporters want a quote from Matt Harvey.
Yes, but like, okay, so that quote is going to be, yeah, man, tough night tonight. Not the outcome I wanted, but I'll get him next time. Like, really? That makes your story that much better than Harvey just being like, no comment.
Yeah, that's Pulitzer Prize stuff right there.
But I'm serious. Baseball players give such bad quotes 90% of the time.
It's not about whether he said no comment or not. I'm fine. If he said no comment, whatever. But it's that he's exhibited the same attitude ever since he came up, and it's sort of infected the locker room in ways that are negative towards the media in general. Like, I'm pretty sure it was Anthony DiComo who told us, maybe on this podcast, whatever, or has written about it or tweeted about it at some point, that the attitude towards the media from all the pitchers got negative when Matt Harvey got back into the locker room in 2015. And in 2014, when he was out with Tommy John and not with the team as much and not talking to the team as much, guys like Jacob DeGrom, guys like, I guess Noah Syndergaard hadn't been called up yet, but, you know, I guess DeGrom was the main example, were friendly, affable towards the media. And now it's just kind of like this toxic negative culture where the media and the players have to be at odds with each other. And I just don't think that that is how this relationship has to be. I think, like, the media, they're mostly just nerdy writers trying to do their job. They're not really trying to do, I guess in New York, maybe they are trying to do gotcha journalism a lot of the time, but, like, you're opening yourself up to gotcha journalism with this dumb shit. Like, just say no comment. Just say, I wasn't good tonight to every question that they ask. Just say, I wasn't good tonight. I should have been better. I wasn't good tonight. I should have been better. Like, at some point, it's not the media's fault that you're bad. Like, and you don't have to come at them with a negative, like, you don't have to come at them with such a, like, a negative tone. That's bullshit. They're doing their job too.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that. Like, he should have treated them well. Because, again, all he does is make the story about himself, right? And then other Mets players are asked about, like, Harvey's attitude and, like, so what do you guys think, right? And, like, yeah, he handles this poorly and he's kind of a dick. Like, as much as I want to like him, right, he's a really hard player to like.
He makes it so hard to root for him.
Yeah. But at the same time, for all we, you know, wax poetic on this podcast about, like, baseball players should, like, show more emotion and, like, we like it when players aren't just, like, robots. And then the guy comes out and is very visibly upset about his role and how he has performed. And he's like, yeah, y'all, I don't want to talk about this tonight. And Twitter is all like, psh, release the guy. And
I mean, I'm like, that's ridiculous. Let's not.
Yes.
I don't think that we need to use that type of tweet as a barometer for what the rational reaction to this is. I just think, personally, it's just a bad look. Like, it's a bad look on its face, though, especially...
I don't disagree with you.
In the context of everything, just his general attitude towards the media, even when he was good. Even when he was good, his attitude towards the media wasn't good. He wasn't, like, living it up. Like, he was just kind of still an asshole.
So then why do you want the comment from him in the first place?
Because he is a story. He's the story of that game.
He wasn't going to give you anything good anyway. It's not like Mike Trout is ever saying anything scintillating after baseball games, right? He's like, yeah, man, I tried to see the ball and I tried to hit the ball, and I did.
But quite frankly, if one reporter has to get a phone call from an angry editor, why don't you have a Matt Harvey quote in this, then it's bullshit. He just needs to answer.
I just kind of disagree that, like, he has to do that every time. Like, why are you not allowed to have an off night? Or be like, yeah, no, not tonight, guys. Like, why can't you do that? Why can't you be like, yeah, I'm not having a good day. Yeah, I'm pretty pissed off right now and I don't really feel like talking. And then the reporter goes to the editor and said, like, hey, Bob, I'm sorry, but he didn't want to talk to any of us.
Hey, I feel personally attacked. Hey, Bob, I'm the reporter. At least I have an office. Or at least I'm the editor. At least I get an office with the door and the desk.
I'm in agreement with you on, like, basically 80% of what you're saying. My point is basically just, like, if there's a night where he doesn't want to have to answer the questions, I think that he's entitled to that.
Do you think that there are... But, okay, if that is the rule of thumb, though, that there's just nights that they don't feel like talking and they're fine to not talk, then no one would ever talk. When is there a night where a player feels like talking to the media? When they hit a walk-off grand slam? Like, when is a player going to want to talk to the media? Not to be the slippery slope guy, but when would Matt Harvey ever talk to the media if he didn't have to? So because he had a bad outing, we're going to just let him off the hook?
Kind of.
Why? So we can only talk to him when he's good, so we can only write good things about him?
He doesn't give a good quote anyway. It doesn't matter. He's not saying anything of substance.
So but we can only quote him when he plays well then? That's what you're saying. If he has a bad night and he doesn't want to talk to the media, well, so when is he going to talk to when is he going to want to talk to the media? When he plays well? So therefore, we can only have a quote from him in a game story if he plays well? I mean, I'm not trying to, like, manipulate your words. I know you're rolling your eyes, but, like, that is what it is. He would not talk to the media ever if he didn't have to. Neither would, you know, a lot of professional athletes. And I think that talking to the media is an important part of sports journalism, which is something that I want to go into.
Yes, I agree with you. I am defending his general mindset after one night.
This is right as a human not to have to say something.
Yeah, that's all. I just think if you look at, like, everything that has happened in his career, and, like, he's at the low point, man. Like, Matt Harvey has not been this low in his career. I am willing to cut him a little bit of slack on it. If you don't want to, that's fine. But I'm willing to be like, this guy is literally at the lowest of the low and really just kind of doesn't feel like chatting about it.
And I feel like, yes, okay.
Because we talk so much about, like, oh, guys are too sensitive. And, like, I saw relatively decently respected members of Mets Twitter be like, Harvey just needs to man up and talk to the media. And
that's dumb. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to come at it from, like, the he should just man up. He should be a man. He should swallow his pride and he should swallow his feelings. Like, fine. If you want to express the fact that you're upset, whatever. Express the fact that you're upset. Don't do it in a closed off way like that. Don't be like, no, fuck you guys. That's basically a fuck you guys kind of thing.
Yes, no, that's literally what he said. Again, not defending his choice of words.
But he's just taking it out on the wrong people.
Yeah.
I'm bordering on the, like, just be better conversation. Like, you wouldn't have to deal with this. But we often have that. We often say, you know, don't be bad and you won't have to get shown up, right? Don't give up a walk-off home run and you won't have to see a bat flip on you.
Yeah.
You know, don't be bad in your relief performance and you won't have to hear a question that you don't want to hear.
Yeah.
It just is what it is. At some point, you have to be accountable for your own actions, not to be his mom, like most of Mets Twitter. But, like, in this specific instance, that's where I'm at. Damn, we've come a long way with him.
I know.
It sucks.
I know. It does suck.
He really sucks.
He's my only Mets jersey. I guess I have a DeGrom giveaway jersey.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll start wearing that one a little more.
Tone shift to Sad Bob now. It's really Sad Bob in his sports editor office with his desk. Puts out the second nameplate that's just sad in front of his name. It sucks, man.
Yeah.
I had, like, a very honest tweet from the Tipping Pitches account being like, in all honesty, like, it sucks how far down the rabbit hole we've gone with this guy. And just how, like, how legitimately electric it used to be when he was at his peak. Like, for all the talk about how he had his decline and him as a person and whether he's a jackass or not, and his sort of off the field issues, like, at the end of the day, we just lost a good baseball player. Like, we just don't get to watch a baseball player be really good at what he does anymore, and that sucks.
Yeah.
That'd be like, it's like, I don't know. It'd be like if Justin Verlander just stopped being good.
Yeah.
That would suck for everyone. Yeah. No one, I mean, I guess the AL West would probably appreciate that for the year, but in the long run, not good for baseball.
Yeah, not good for baseball. I think that there are a lot of people who are not shedding any tears, you know, Tiny Violin, just because of his attitude, right, the whole time. Like, if Justin Verlander, like, everyone would collectively mourn Justin Verlander being bad.
About him like he's dying. There's been a lot of Justin Verlander death talk on this podcast in the last 2 weeks, which is weird.
Yeah, but I think you have a lot of people, and Mets fans included, who are just kind of like, good riddance, man. Like you've been a... You know, the whole cancer to the clubhouse idea, right? And just be like, ugh, I don't know.
Generally, I think that's too negative of a thing to say about a person.
That's a really awful thing to say about a person.
Whether it applies or not, we can find a way to phrase that better.
Yeah, probably. Okay, Bobby, it's been a very New York heavy podcast this week.
Seriously,
yeah.
Coastal Elites. We've seen this podcast.
We've really crossed the spectrum from every Yankees player is good and great to this specific Mets player is bad.
At Pinstripe Alley, at Amazing Avenue, at In Mets We Trust. At I'm just gonna. At Blog Boys, hire us.
So we got heated. We got in our feels this podcast. And before we wrap this up, we have to check in with our favorite New York baseball player.
Affiliated. New York affiliated.
Affiliated. Soon to be his home.
Don't say that.
Timothy Tebow. Did you know that he's hitting 255 this year?
That's actually good.
He hit like 320 in the last week. He's striking out a significant amount of the time.
He's Joey Gallo. How many times do I have to call him Joey Gallo before you acknowledge that progress in baseball is not linear? I'm going to make a t-shirt with the phrase, progress in baseball is not linear, kind of like in that really dramatic quote style with like the silhouette picture of Tim Tebow above it. I can see it in my head right now. It's going to be beautiful, and we're going to sell those and make money. So that we can rent a studio.
Honestly, yeah, I'm all for it.
We're not always going to have access to this very remote room that we're in an NYU journalism building.
Yeah, that I don't think that 444 BABIP is really sustainable. He's 40% strikeout rate. Yeah, it's not going to take you very far.
Holy,
he's striking
shit
out every other plate appearance.
That's insane.
Yeah. You know, he's
444 BABIP?
Yeah.
He literally is Aaron Judge from the left side of the plate.
Yeah, pretty much.
How's his walk rate? How's he seeing the ball?
You know, honestly, he's walking like 10% of the time.
Tim Tebow is the three true outcomes hero that we need.
I know. We just need him to flash a little bit more of that power. He's flashing like league average power right now, aka one home run. But he's got four doubles, so we'll take it.
I wonder if he was doing ESPN NFL draft coverage today, so he had to miss the game. Oh, man.
Yeah, if he's not, he's just that guy who's, like, checking his phone in between innings in the dugout.
That was me while we were recording this podcast.
Yeah, I know.
He's doing better than we could have ever asked for. And honestly, it's good for the brand. I'm not going to lie. We are the Tebow guys.
We are at this point.
This is the anchor around our ankles as a podcast.
I've come full circle. At first, I, like, leaned into it. And then by, like... the off season, I was like, oh God, we've had enough of Tebow. And now I'm just like, you might as well just enjoy it while we can, right?
This is like the arc of national media with Tebow too.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, he was like 100% approval rating. Right after that Florida speech, you will never see a player play harder in college ever again or something like that.
Yeah.
It was like, everyone was like, I would literally go to war with this man. And then... you know, the fatigue set in, and now we're back, man.
We've arrived.
Although I feel like most people still feel the fatigue.
Yeah, probably. Honestly, it's hard for me to fight it sometimes, too.
The thing is, most people don't know that he's hitting 255. 255! That's not bad!
Yeah.
He should be on the Yankees, that power play up there. Yeah. Who can we get for him? Who could the Mets get for Tebow? I'm thinking like Clint Frazier, maybe?
I was just going to go all the way and say Gleyber, frankly. I mean, grab Luis Severino while we're at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tebow for Severino straight up, who says no? All right, we need to stop because this is descending into madness and we've been going on for so long and I'm so hungry and so tired.
That's just like my life motto. It's like it's been going on for so long and I'm just so hungry and so tired.
All right, well, if you listened all the way through this,
props.
That's better than I could say for myself. As most of you will know, you can reach out to us at Gmail at tippingpitchespod@gmail.com or on Twitter, tipping_pitches. We are available on basically any podcast app that you could want. That's a normal podcast app that most people listen to their stuff on. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Radio Public. I think that about does it. Or you can find us on our website, tippingpitches.atavis.com. This has been a promo. Anything else to add, Alex?
I don't think so. I'm excited to watch Acuna. That's about it.
Yeah, let's do it. By the time we come back, he's going to be like the best player in baseball.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, y'all. We will see you next week.
New York, New York.